Welcome to G&D Spotlight, the podcast where we shine a light on the ever-evolving world of security tech. I'm Jessica Antonacci, marketing for US PayTech, and today we are joined by G&D's Mark Van Horn and Gravy's Zubin Vandravala. Mark is the lead for digital solutions in North America for G&D. He is ultimately responsible for the evangelism and implementation of the G&D digital solutions portfolio in the US and Canada. Zubin is the vice president at Gravy. He leads the sales and partnership teams spearheading revenue growth and commercializing Gravy's cloud-native orchestration platform with customers globally. As a seasoned business leader with deep domain expertise in financial services, payments, and technology, Zubin is known for driving adoption and scaling early-stage digital payment solutions. Prior to his role at Gravy, Zubin held leadership roles at Google, Visa, and HSBC. Today, we're talking about tokenization, a fundamental and critical element of the payments ecosystem, and how it's laying the foundation to the future of payments and authentication and orchestration. I'll now hand it over to Mark.
Thank you, Jessica. Hello, Zubin. Thank you for joining us today. You and I have known each other for quite a long time, and just hoping that you could elaborate for our listeners who you are and what your role at Gravy is.
Thanks, Mark. Thanks, Jessica. And really appreciate you both giving me the opportunity to come and join you. By way of background, I'm Zubin. I lead our commercial team at Gravy. Jessica, thanks for the kind introduction. Prior to Gravy, like I said, I worked at Google, spent 7 years building out sort of the early versions of tokenization that I ultimately played out in what was Android Pay and Google Pay eventually. Prior to that, worked at Visa, right as they were working through translating the 16-digit card number from physical plastic to into the digital format with early versions of V.me, Visa Checkout, what has now become Click to Pay. Again, pretty excited to be here, pretty excited to be using this as an opportunity to catch up. I know, Mark, we've done a lot of work together on tokenization, so excited to sort of peel back the onion and dive into the details together.
Fantastic. Thank you, Zubin. Maybe you could expand just for a few moments on Gravy, how it all got started, and maybe why someone with your experience would be attracted to work at Gravy and sort of help lead that mission forward.
The thesis of Gravy really comes from this notion that merchants and platforms are building payments teams. Like I mentioned, I spent about 7 years at Google. Google has about 500 engineers working on the payment stack. If you look at the innovation that has happened in the acceptance space over the last 10 to 15 years, you have companies like Stripe, Adyen, Braintree doing a really, really good job of making it easy to go live with payments. 10 lines of code and you're off to the races. And I would actually attribute the growth in e-commerce payments directly to the innovation that these companies have done in making it easy for entrepreneurs, early ventures to sort of come online. That works if you're a really small or medium-sized business. As you scale and as you become a large enterprise merchant, the reality is that the complexity of payments goes beyond just that one single 10 lines of code connection. The need to sort of connect to multiple PSPs to sort of optimize and customize and stabilize your platform, create redundancies, the need to connect to various different payment methods as you expand internationally. Great example, as you go into many European markets, the predominant payment method isn't card payments. And so the need to support those local payment methods, we're seeing that in countries like India and Brazil as well. And then, of course, the weird and wonderful payment methods, whether that's cryptocurrency, buy now, pay later, the craze in account payments, all of that translates into what originally was 10 lines of code into a spaghetti of APIs that you need to manage. That really is the reason why we created Gravy. And I don't want to take any credit for this. Our founders really went and said, hey, what if we created a platform to really, an infrastructure layer, a platform to manage that complexity? And so that's really what we've built, which is really an infrastructure layer to help you deploy, manage, customize, optimize, and ultimately empower our clients to own and act on their payment strategy.
That's fantastic. Would you say you've either had some lessons learned or maybe keys to success that you've found while navigating the payment industry, whether for yourself or some of those companies that you've mentioned?
Oh, absolutely. when we talk about complexity of the payment stack, I think it's an endless complexity. I think, Mark, you and I were chatting about this, right? Like, I feel like every day I learn something new in payments, and anyone who says that they've learned everything about payments is probably lying. There's this, like, every day I come across a new edge case or a new sort of unique challenge that somebody is facing and the need to solve it. I think the success for Gravy has really come from this notion that we focused on real problems. Going back to our founding story, one of the key areas that our founders really caught on to is when they talked about an orchestration platform, many of our the people they spoke with and did that research with were concerned about a company like Gravy becoming their single point of failure. They said, hey, what if, like, you solve all these problems, don't you essentially become my single point of failure? And I think, again, going back to our founders, I'll give them full credit to state that they really focused on this and said, how do they create Gravy in a way that enables us to not become, or at least reduce that complexity to ensure that we're not that point of failure for our clients? And so what we've built is really an infrastructure stack. We deploy ourselves as a single tenancy infrastructure. What this means is that for every single client that comes onto the platform, we deploy an instance of Gravy. That is a dedicated instance. So bring this to life in an example. Woolworths is one of our largest clients in the market. In their example, we're able to deploy instances of Gravy that are customized to the performance, capacity, infrastructure, and redundancy that is required for them. Similarly, one of our other large customers is Grammarly here in the US. In their example, we've deployed our infrastructure very specifically for them in a data center in the US market. There's no commingling of data. Going back to your question about success, that singular focus and really focusing on one, how do we ensure we're not really becoming that point of failure, but two, solving real problems for our clients is really, I think, what's held us together over these last 3 years. The growth that we're seeing, the trajectory that we have, and, you know, I would actually argue that any company, especially in our stage, ensuring that there's a singular focus or a focus on what we are, who we are, and then ultimately solving real problems in the industry is really what's game changing.
Steven, that's great. And I couldn't agree more. I think there's a lot of products out there in the industry that are solutions in search of a problem. And it sounds like you all are doing that opposite. You're finding and identifying problems and then finding solutions for those problems. And I think that's truly one of the keys for the success that Gravy has found. I think you kind of talked at a high level about the problems you're trying to solve, but maybe you can elaborate a little bit more specifically about what is the product that you're offering your clients? What are your clients looking for when they come to you other than this, you know, problem-solving step here?
Love it. And I talked about sort of our core platform being this single instance infrastructure. Built on that infrastructure are a couple of modules. I think the first module we focus on is really our connections module. Think of it as we've deployed connections or built integrations to 100-plus payment service providers, payment methods. And the idea is that our customers, our clients are able to integrate to Gravy once and then have access through our unified API into all of these various different connections. That's one module. We've built this. We've scaled this. We're actually seeing some pretty good traction and growth from it. Closely tied to that, because we're enabling a multi-PSP, multi-payment method strategy, closely tied to that is the need to have that PSP agnostic PCI level one certified vault. We've built that infrastructure. Again, we built it on a cloud and with databases. We're fully PCI, not only PCI level one certified, but we're SOC 2 compliant, CCPA, GDPR. We also now comply to the latest Australian data privacy requirements as well. This is where we probably spend a little more time in this conversation talking about having that PSP agnostic vault is, of course, one piece of it. Building tokenization, vaulting, and all those weird and wonderful things that essentially secure those transactions is the next level of detail. I'll save this for later in our conversation, but that's the second module that we've built. And then built on top of that is our really where the real magic of, or the gold dust of where Gravy plays in, is our no-code workflow rules. Through a simple set of, you know, plain English and really easy rules, our clients are able to customize what payment options they're able to show to the user, as well as how those payments get routed all to the various different processes. So really rich set of tools and capabilities that I'm not going to be able to justice in this particular podcast, but we're pretty excited about the unique no-code layer that we built out that's really empowering our clients to own and act on their payment strategy. The last piece I'll talk about is really now that we've created all these capabilities to, you know, support various different pay-ins and this complexities around it, we've done a really good job of unifying all of that into a singular set of reports and insights. Obviously, reporting can be initially on the auth and capture aspect of it. We're doing a lot of work of making it easy for back office support as well. So consolidating a bunch of settlement and reporting and insights, being able to provide rich data and actionable insights to our customers to act on that is sort of the next stage of our growth. And we're pretty excited about that.
That's fantastic. I think our listeners are getting a good understanding of what Gravy brings to the market and why so many customers out there are really excited about what you all are doing. You and I talk frequently. When we do talk, it seems like 90% of our conversation is about tokenization. I was hoping maybe for our listeners, you can maybe get into a little more details about tokenization and what you see as the primary benefits of tokenization.
I'm sure the listeners are wondering what the additional 10% is. We both have young kids and we talk about kids' books. So maybe that's a separate podcast for us.
Yes.
Yes. And I think some really, really great insights that we've pulled away from that. But I think that's a separate podcast in itself. To go back to your question about tokenization and vaulting, I think the couple of key things to talk about out here. So one is, if we look at the world of 16-digit card numbers, and I go back to my early experience at Visa, as Visa was making that transition from 16-digit card numbers embossed on a piece of plastic to the digital world, I think there was a big focus on saying, how do you ensure that, how do you secure these credentials? And I think the way, if you look at the tokenization of vaulting, is not a new concept. People have done that for a long, long period of time. That's merchants have done that by creating, working with their PSPs and creating PSP type tokens. Stripe, Adyen, and Braintree do that in isolation with themselves as well. And I think, over the last 10 years, the networks have really done a good job of sort of saying, how do you tokenize directly with the networks, essentially intermediating the need and have that cross-pollination? That's where we've spent probably most of our time working on. So for the benefit of, people who aren't really familiar with network tokenization is the exchange of a 16-digit PAN, or think of it as a 16-digit card number that sits with the payment network that issued that card. So Visa has a service where you can replace that 16-digit card number with a token. And that token, then Visa as a token service provider is able to manage that complexity when that transaction goes through. Obviously, the big advantages and benefits of this is the security. If those credentials get compromised by any shape or form, the original 16-digit card number doesn't get compromised. It's only those credentials, and you're able to sever that. There's a lot of work that's been done around binding those credentials. I think Apple Pay and Google Pay were the original innovators in that space, along with the payment networks, to bind those two devices. But I think the work that we're starting to see in the industry is, how do you take other use cases around it? So binding it to specific merchants, binding it, which is some of the work we're doing together, but then also binding it to non-mobile devices with some of the work that's happening with FIDO, et cetera. To me, creating this ecosystem which creates security is really the foundation to ultimately sort of take this to the next stage, to say, how do you not just have secure in case these cards get compromised, but also how do you authenticate that that user is that user? So it's a pretty exciting, for us, foundational element to payments. We're excited about the journey that we're on. I think tokenization as such creates really a foundational element that then feeds off a whole bunch of other things as it relates to payments.
It does feel like sort of like a big wave, right? That just kind of continually evolving, and then the next step, and then someone has the next great idea to build upon the previous step, and we get these all these great advancements. Expanding upon that, you all as Gravy are bringing a lot of focus to the PSP agnostic vaulting and tokenization. Could you maybe speak about the three drivers you see in that trend?
Yeah. I kind of go back to the origin story of Gravy, right? Like, merchants are looking at this and saying, at the end of the day, they want to control and own and act on their own payment strategies. This is a trend that we are accelerating or changing. We look at ourselves as merchants are already doing this. I go back to my experience at Google. Google had, I think 10 or 12 different processors that they connected to, and they had to manage and optimize and customize and play that out. we're seeing that play out, and it's a trend that we think will continue to happen. Traditionally, the way merchants have dealt with that is by tokenizing and vaulting with their set PSP. So think of it as they would vault and tokenize with Stripe, they would vault and tokenize with Adyen. When the user comes in to transact, and depending on where that experience is, it's a disjointed experience for that customer, where their credentials, they may have saved that with Stripe, but when they try in the background, when that processor changed to Adyen, those credentials may not have been saved with Adyen. So there's a lot of duplication. There's a lot of duplication in terms of negative customer experience. There's a lot of duplication in terms of cost that a merchant may be incurring to tokenize across various different providers. So I think that's one key trend that we see that we can sort of help a merchant manage. That's one piece. The second piece is, as the networks are looking at enabling and accelerating network tokenization and being able to do that in a sort of a PSP agnostic way, we see our ability or the role that we play in the partnership that we're working by, rather than merchants doing tokenization just with their PSPs, having the ability to do a tokenization where they are the token requester. We think that is a key differentiation of what we as GND and Gravy can provide our merchants. It also means that merchants now have full control of what tokens they can use. They can take advantage not only of all the price advantages that they get with using tokenization, but they're also able to then take advantage of things like liability shift, enhanced authorization, reduced fraud, and a whole bunch of everything in between. So I think there are a couple of trends that are working to our advantage as it relates to PSP agnostic tokenization, and of course, building network token in a PSP agnostic way over that as well.
Fantastic. So you're talking network tokens a lot, which again, this is our conversation that you and I have. Obviously, it adds another layer of value for these merchants, a little bit of complexity. What are you seeing as far as the awareness out there for your customers, whether that be the merchants or the other processors, and maybe their adoption level of the service?
I go back to the conversation, Mark, you and I had about 2 years ago when we first started this collaboration. And the words I used was, you know, Gravy doesn't want to be held, left holding the bag. And I think that kind of is a reflection of where the industry is and the awareness, et cetera. Like, I think there's momentum moving on our side, and we keep saying this is the next 6 months, it's going to be the next big wave. And, you know, payments takes its time to evolve. It's complex. There are a lot of parties playing in it. So I think the first piece that I'd call out where the complexity lies is that given the number of players that are in the ecosystem, each one has a varied level of adoption, right? Initially, it was about acquirers being able to support this. Subsequent to that, it's been issuers being able to support this. And now there's a level of consumer awareness that is happening. Each of those, you know, aren't in parallel. They're almost happening in sequence, and adoptions of that are happening at various different levels. I think the collaboration that we play in this is twofold. One is, how do we really enable our clients and our merchants to make it easier to onboard? So the complexities that come with sort of onboarding, et cetera, how do we abstract that and really make it easy for them to sort of just say, hey, I want to start using network tokens, hit a couple of, complete a couple of forms, hit a couple of switches, and they're off to the races. So that's one aspect of it. I think the second aspect of it is, there is a level of latency. There is a level of, based on the exact set of transactions that could result in a decline as well. So the ability to then fail back when all hell breaks loose to an FPAN is the other thing our merchants care a lot about. So, it's a thing that we've built into our platform with the work that we've done with you, that, you know, the first transaction may be a network token, but be able to fail back into a full PAN 16-digit card number transaction is an extremely critical thing that our merchants care about. So I think there's a level of complexity in the ecosystem. And of course, I would just end with also saying that there's a bunch of other use cases, I would say the non-happy parts. Network tokens haven't solved those just yet. I think the work you and we are doing along with the networks really are looking at, like, what are those unhappy parts or those exception flows? How can we work together to help our merchants manage through or wade through that complexity, versus the merchants having to reinvent the wheel every single time they come across that?
That's probably leads right into my next question was going to be, which is, everything sounds so rosy. Like, why wouldn't everybody be using network tokens, right? You and I each know that there are a few challenges and complexities in the situation there. From our point of view, one thing that we really see is unique use cases in onboarding, right? And each scheme kind of doing the littlest bit different or needing different sort of levels of information that they would require to do different things, and classifying certain merchants in different ways and some complexity there. And it's been, I hesitate to use the word fun, but it has been fun to problem solve with you all in some of those more unique cases. I do agree, though. I think the vast majority of merchants out there fit in that more typical role, and that network tokens really brings a lot to the table for them. But I think working with someone like yourselves that can handle the more complex use cases is really something that brings value to the market as well.
We are payment geeks when we use payments and fun in the same sentence.
usually the fun part comes with the children's books, right? So it would seem remiss if we didn't talk a little bit about, and you've hinted towards it a little bit, the idea of tokens and authentication and how those maybe work together today, but more likely how they're going to work together tomorrow, whether that be through devices or through specific merchants and things of that nature. Maybe you could elaborate a little bit on that, how the opportunity for card-not-present transactions will be affected by these additional authentication methods tied to tokens.
That's a great question and something I feel pretty passionate about. In fact, Olivier and I were on a panel with MasterCard, I think it was like last September at Money 2020, and we kind of dived into that together as well. So very topical topic and something that, you know, we, as I think GND and Gravy, pretty care about. I think your acquisition as well recently and et cetera sort of proves that as well. Maybe I'll take a step back and provide some context and why I feel pretty passionate about this. Like if we take a kind of massive step back and look at where the European market, and I think the European market reflects where usually payments teams to head, very highly regulated. PSD2 obviously was delayed many, many, many times, but eventually became a thing and is a thing. And I think it's doing a lot of really good. It's driving a level of security, which I think the industry needed at this particular point in time. But the way that it's been, and for people who don't understand the context, so European regulators required strong authentication, strong custom authentication or SCA with every single transaction. There's some exceptions around it, but the idea is that, you know, there needs to be sort of two-factor authentication with every single transaction that you do in the European region. The way that has been implemented is using 3D Secure, and 3D Secure is an archaic way, a technology that was developed, I think, 20, 25 years ago. And you know, it's not the most efficient way to complete a transaction. And so while it's exciting that, you know, the implementation or the desire of what was being intended with the European Union made a lot of sense, the way it is being implemented adds a lot of friction and, to be honest, like reduces conversion in the market. The second sort of secular trend that I'll talk about is the work that, you know, Apple, Google, et cetera, have done with the networks of saying, hey, can you bind token with the right cryptogram onto a device? And once you authenticate, so a user goes through some friction to add that, they authenticate it with their bank, there's two-factor authentication. But given where technology is, once that credential is bound to the device, there's a high level of assurance that every time somebody, you know, completes a subsequent transaction with some level of biometrics on that device, based on some level of code and heuristics that we know about that user on that device, we know that those subsequent transactions are that user making it. I think taking those two concepts and sort of secular trends of like, how do you really improve strong authentication to not just be a friction-free process and also this friction-free process that, you know, Apple and Google have devised on that device really is the foundation to sort of where we see the industry growing. We've seen the networks doing a bunch of work around this to say, you know, I think click-to-pay is sort of one manifestation of this. But I think there's sort of various different versions of this that would play out in the industry. And I think if you look at it, in the center of all of it sits tokens, right? Like the ability to translate that 16-digit card number into a proxy 16 digits that are then bound to that particular merchant device context, where there's some friction up front to do that initial binding, but subsequently they're all friction-free. So that's what I get excited about. Like we're at this sort of assessment, you know, point in our journeys around authentication. And from our vantage point, we see tokens being sort of central to that strategy.
Yeah, I agree completely. And just elaborating a little bit more on your 3DS, you know, obviously, like I said, our acquisition of NetCetera, we see real value there. It is something that is leveraged globally, but not very well here in the US. But we are seeing an adoption of sort of like a 3DS only, or excuse me, data only kind of package where it's like we're eliminating the friction, but we still want all that information to use our risk-based authentication to make sure that everything's going through smoothly. I guess, you know, we've covered a lot here, and I think we're not that we're running out of time, but we're using our time very well. I'd love to know, because nothing ever stands still in payments, right? What are Gravy's next steps? What is the future of Gravy? You know, you're going to take your foundation that you have now and you're going to build upon it. Where do you see yourselves, you know, in the near future and maybe even in the distant future?
And recent Horowitz published a really interesting study, and I'm struggling with the name right now, about 2 years ago, talking about the complexity of the future of sort of payment stacks. And the way they described it is there's a pay-in or sort of the revenue-in aspects of it, is saying, how do you sort of make it easy for people to choose the payment option that they are with the ultimate goal of maximizing revenue, optimizing revenue, maybe the right way to put it. And then there's a separate side, if you look at the payment stack, there's a separate side to this, which is really revenue recognition, which is the treasury functions of being able to sort of recognize that revenue, being able to manage it against your ledger, et cetera. If I look at Gravy's journey over the last 3 years, we've really focused on that first element of it, really at the pay-in side of it. That's where we've been really, really focused. I think we're shifting our focus over the next couple of quarters and years, hopefully, to also help reduce that complexity. So how do we manage some of those settlement aspects? How do we support some of those payout pieces of it? I think that's the journey we're on. If I go back to even the point we were talking about, like every day I feel like I come across a new unhappy path or a new complexity that I didn't know about. Mm-hmm. That's the work that our clients are dealing on a daily basis, right? Like, and if our goal is to abstract that complexity, resting on just the pain aspects of what we've achieved so far is almost naive. We believe that, you know, that continuum to sort of solve the pain points that our clients see is almost endless. And the focus is what we've done, which has made us successful, is really on the pains. But like, we see that vision in terms of sort of going through that entire continuum of pains through revenue recognitions. That's where I get pretty excited about the work that's ahead of us, staying focused and making sure that we're actually able to deliver against those objectives.
That's fantastic. So staying focused on the customer, right? What are their pain points? Fixing those problems. Great. Well, I really appreciate all that information about Gravy. I'd like to pick your brain just a little bit more as an individual. We do something here in this podcast we call Praise or Craze. The idea is that I kind of fire off a couple topics to you real quick. You just simply tell me whether you think that is a great innovation or great topic, and then or whether you think it's just a craze and something that will pass by the wayside. And if you don't mind, maybe giving us one or two sentences of context for your thoughts, which might be kind of a way to finish up our podcast here. So, all right. So the first off would be cryptocurrencies.
I will have to say craze, and the context of it is I see it as a problem or a solution looking for a problem. I do feel like there is some great utility in the work that blockchain can do in sort of B2B payments, etc. But the current manifestation of crypto payments, and specifically in retail payments, is really a craze.
Okay, fantastic. Not to sound too similar, but the word pays.
I feel pretty passionate. I'm going to say praise. And the reason I say that is, I was involved in some of the early iterations of what was then V.me, Visa Checkout, et cetera. And I think one of the things lacking in that early solutions was they were really focusing much more on the merchant side of the equation and less on the consumer side. I think what I've been pretty excited with the work that pays, and I would even expand that, so the click-to-pay solution is really focusing on the consumer aspects of it, being able to pre-provision a lot of those credentials, being able to actually deliver some value, not just to the consumer, but the ecosystem, I think is worthy of praise.
Fantastic. Real-time payments.
Again, I think this is I would say praise, but in the right context. I don't think it's there in retail payments just yet. But I think there's a huge, huge, huge opportunity to sort of drive efficiencies around cross-border payments, drive efficiency around real-time payments or B2B payments that require some level of real-time activity as it relates to it. We're already seeing some success in European and APAC and LATAM markets. I hope to see some of that play out in the US market with FedNow and others as well.
All right. And our last one, buy now, pay later.
Yeah, this was a tricky one. I in prep of this, I was trying to decide which way I go, and I'm going to stick to sort of craze. That's personally from a personal opinion. I've never used buy now, pay later. I'm a credit card user, and I think this many of us probably listening to this podcast probably are credit card users. So I would have to go with craze, but I'd love to be proved wrong.
Well, fantastic. It's always great to have your insight. And if we actually knew, right, then we could be steering things in different directions in the industry, right? I really appreciate your opinion, Zubin. I appreciate all your time. I think it's been wonderful. I always enjoy talking with you and always learn something too. So I appreciate that as well. And
Mark, if I could add, you know, one of the things going back to the 2 years ago when we first started working together, it was an unlikely pairing of two organizations, a 150-year-old organization with a, you know, at the time, barely a year-old organization. But I think what brought us together is some core values that we shared. And that is really around innovation. Like there's a sort of a desire on both sides to drive innovation. And I think there's this other piece to innovation. It's not about innovation internally, but a recognition that innovation doesn't always happen internally, but through partnerships. And that appetite to sort of collaborate and drive innovation together, I think sort of brought us together. So again, thank you for the opportunity, not just to partner, but be part of this podcast.
Fantastic. I really appreciate it, Zubin. Thank you again for your time today. And I look forward to our next opportunity to spend some time together. Thank you, Zubin.
Subscribe now so you never miss an episode. We can't wait to share these exciting conversations with you.